Hey, before we start today's show, I want to let you know that we have created a guide just for you, because choosing a cosmetology school is one of the biggest investments you're ever going to make. Most people just don't know the right questions to ask before they enter a cosmetology school. So that's why we've created a free video guide featuring over a dozen deep dive sessions on everything from financial aid to spotting school red flags, you know, the stuff you should avoid, to also just the truth about how to make more money in this industry. So don't start your journey blind. Get the uncut inside information you need to avoid the wrong school and start your career with confidence. You can get the guide by going to avedaidaho.com/guide. That's avedaidaho.com/guide. That link is also in our show notes. Now, here's today's show. Well, hello and welcome to Uncut and Unfiltered Cosmetology Insights with Nathan Shaw, where we help aspiring and current beauty professionals master the business and the craft of cosmetology so you can build a successful, long-lasting career. Your guide is Nathan Shaw, a dedicated educator and working man's hairdresser who successfully built his schools from his earnings from behind the chair. And he generously shares his deep industry experience to challenge misconceptions and to teach you the crucial skills you need to manage your career. And I'm your host, Andy Traub. Today, we're going to talk about something very, very practical that I think almost every person in this industry has thought about at some point, which is opening their own salon. So Nathan's going to speak about this from personal preference and experience, but also from his experience in teaching really thousands of students who are entering the industry, who I think many of them come into your schools, I assume, thinking, hey, I'm going to open my own salon. That's my path. So Nathan, welcome to your show, and look forward to hearing and learning from you today.
Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it.
So let's start with the first part of this, which is the reality financially of opening your own salon. When people come to your schools, are there some that believe, hey, I'm going to graduate and do my own thing? Is that a common perspective?
Absolutely. That's a, you know, it's a career that very much attracts a lot of people that want to do their own thing and be an individual, whether that's opening their own salon and actually having people work there, or even the salon suite model, right, where they go in and rent and start their own little mini salon inside a greater building of salons. But that's kind of the predominant thing in our industry, in my area in particular, is like people want to be self-employed or have their own salon.
So let's differentiate that if we can. I think for this episode, it'd be helpful for us to identify. Mm-hmm. I'm envisioning, you know, I think owning a suite inside of a larger business of suites is different. That's owning a suite and operating sort of solo inside of the suite model.
Exactly.
Then there's the, I want to own a salon. Yeah. I want it to be mine. I want to name that thing. Everyone who cuts there, it works for me. You know, if there is anyone else, or maybe they just want to go open their own. Again, I think that you could do your own thing in a suite situation. But I think that there's also a group of people who say, I want to own my own salon. I want people to work for me. I'm going to get a cut on their cuts. So let's talk about that. And again, we haven't said if it's a good idea or not. But let's talk about the realities of that, just from a financial perspective. So if I could sort of set up the situation, commonly you're going to have, let's just say, 3 to 5 other chairs in your salon. Is that a starter salon?
I would say for a starter salon, that's probably pretty accurate. Yeah, they're usually a little smaller, something like 4 to 6 chairs, maybe up to 8. And then, you know, a more advanced salon, maybe after someone's had some experience, they might open a very large salon with 20 plus styling chairs, you know?
Yeah, that's a lot of chairs.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
Right.
And that's a lot of square footage. So yes. Let's say that someone is thinking, you know, I want to start with a reasonable amount. So it's maybe to me and 2 or 3 other, maybe 4 other at the most people. But I want to own the salon. And obviously this can be very huge across the country, but what is a reasonable amount of rent one might be have to cover to do that?
So to your point, it definitely varies based on your location, right? I have some waxing salons currently that are similar square footage, and one's $2,500 a month. It's a small salon. but it's in a market where rents are much cheaper. And then the other one is, you know, it's over double that. It's like $5,500 a month, just because it's in a greater metropolitan area where rents are higher. But depending on where you're at, I would say that's about 1,200 square feet. You know, that's kind of the type of range you see. And obviously, there's areas where it's even much higher than that.
Yeah, just from personal experience, my daughter she does ballet extensively. And the experience that her teacher had with buying or renting a new space, their rent went from $3,000 to $7,000 within 4 years. And so that's another thing you've got to factor in. Are you making twice as much because your rent went up twice as much, you know? So that's the other factor you've got to factor in is, you know, the cost of things generally goes up, landlords generally. But another reality of that is how long of a lease generally do you have to do in a commercial setting?
So in my experience, and I've signed a lot of commercial leases, you're not going to find anything usually shorter than a 5-year initial term. Usually they're going to want 10 years.
And yeah, I think that surprises a lot of people. Yeah. This is not a year-to-year thing.
No.
5 is the lowest that yeah. you've seen, right?
And most time, like I've seen it, you know, a 5-year with a 5-year option, they're basically trying to commit you to 10, but they're like, okay, we'll take 5 as a commitment, and then you can do 5 more years. At the end of that 10 years, if you're still there, you're going to kind of renegotiate the whole thing. Not the whole thing, but okay, how long, or do they still want you there? But yeah, I've had a lot of salons that, depending on it's the landlord who the company is that owns the commercial building. Some of my bigger institutional investment building owners, I mean, like, you know, their big institutions that owns lots of commercial property across the country, it's going to be a 10-year minimum. They want a 10-year, you know.
You mentioned something, Nathan, that I think a lot of people don't know. And even if they sign a lease, they may not understand the realities of it. I also had a friend recently who is a business owner. And he was given a 30-day notice to move out. His lease was coming up, and it was in his lease. And it said, you know, if we want you to not be able to renew your lease, or we want to exercise that option, we'll give you a 30-day notice. And they did. They said, here's your 30-day notice. And he's like, what? Because he was fully prepared to re-up. And they didn't even give him a new price. They just said, you have 30 days. And so he had to find a new place. And again, I don't know that that's going to be your situation if you're listening, but those are the realities of when you sign a lease. That those are the options you need to think and talk about, which we'll get into a little bit later in the episode. So let's start there, assuming that there's, you know, utility costs and insurance costs and things like that. You know, the reality of that can be quite substantial. Who, in your opinion, is able to do that? What are the different funding sources that someone could? Is it a loan? Is it outside investor? Is it you saved up a bunch of cash? I mean, what is the reality of opening a salon and having it operate for a year? What kind of cash flow would you need to have in order to do that?
I think you just hit on the three main ones, really, right? It's a loan, you've saved up a bunch of cash, or an outside investor. And oftentimes, you know, to be blunt, because we're in an industry of creatives. You get a lot of people that want to, and here's why they want to open a salon. It's they've got this creative vision. They're like, I want it styled this way. I want this to be the vibe, the design. It's going to bring like-minded stylists to my salon. You know, that's kind of what they're looking for. But they don't always have the more analytical side of their brain that says, hey, what's this going to cost? Do I have a business plan? You know, et cetera. And unfortunately, banks shy away from startup salons for loans, right? Unless you have other equity or something they can kind of collateralize. So usually it's going to take, for most people, outside investors, or you've got to save a bunch of cash, because the loan is going to be the smaller portion of it most of the time in a salon.
Yeah, and let's just be frank. The reason banks shy away from those things is because banks do math. You know, banks live on math. And if they're looking at an industry, it's why it's more expensive to get insurance if you're a roofer than it is if you're a stylist, because roofers get hurt more than stylists. You know what I mean? It's just math, right? When from an insurance perspective. So let's talk about the reality let's talk about just really quick the reality of those costs. Okay. What are the costs going to be associated with with operating your business?
When are you talking about the actual lease or just the whole salon in general?
Yeah, I mean, just the things that are going to go in. You want to own a business. What are the costs?
That's just it. There's a lot of costs. You know, I think people don't think of the product costs. If you're going to own the salon and you have to provide all the products, and you want to carry a reputable product line. You know, I've done product line buy-ins for different product lines, and it's anywhere from like $12,000 to $20,000, and that's just for your initial order. So that's one. You got, of course, tenant improvements. How much do you have to put into the building to make it work for your salon? You know, I think people, the thing that shocked me, I shouldn't say people, I'll speak from experience here. I was blown away at what plumbing and electrical costs are for a salon if it doesn't have existing plumbing and electrical that works, because salons, you know, they have quite a heavy load for plumbing and electrical. Of course, there's, you have to have insurance. You have to, you know, you have to make sure you're not just covering rent, but it's like, what other utilities are you going to get hit with every month? There's going to be taxes, right? And then on top of it, you got to make sure you get all your permits and licensing, et cetera, which, you know, again, depending on the state and even the city within the state, you're going to have a state license, most likely. You're going to have a city business license, et cetera. So there's a lot of costs that people don't think about.
Yeah. And if it sounds like I'm trying to be Debbie Downer, I'm kind of trying to be Debbie Downer. It's one of the things that we talked about in preparing this is just to face the, it's better to hear this and be a little discouraged and go, okay, I need to recalibrate. I need to think through this a little bit more than to go in blindly. And, you know, there's a reason you went to cosmetology school. It's because you wanted to go do cosmetology, and you didn't want to go get in a bunch of debt. If you want to get in a bunch of debt and wander around for 4 years, then go to a traditional college and don't know what you're going to do. That's what a lot of people do in college. And that's why they leave with hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. You know, so those are the resources that are available to you, and comes from a financial perspective, but also those are some of the costs. And it's not that we're saying don't do this, it's do it in the right order. So let's talk about, from a positive perspective, if you're going to do it, what does a good business plan look like? We're talking about legal structure, we're talking about market research. Let's talk about if someone says, you know what, I have some analytical mind to me. I'm not just a creative, Nathan. I have a business mind. What should they focus on when it comes to planning and executing if they're going to go open a salon?
There's a lot of things that go into that, right, with that business plan.
We could talk about this for 10 hours. We're going to talk about it for about 15 more minutes. But what are some of the things when it comes to like market research? What does that really look like? What are you trying to know about your market when you're doing research?
Yeah, I think you need to know the demographics. Like, if you're wanting to be an upscale salon that charges premium prices because you're going to offer more of a luxury service than, say, a franchise salon that's more about speed, then you've got to be in a neighborhood that can support that. Like, what's the economic demographics of the area you're going to? There's also not just within the area you're going to, but what about the location? Are you going to be hidden somewhere where no one ever sees you, and so you have to spend a lot more on marketing dollars, or are you going to pay a premium for rent as part of your marketing because you're going to be in a highly visible location, right? Those are some of the types of things. You got to know how much cash you need at startup, and, you know, probably several months of working capital, because all the best intentions with opening a business, it never just starts raining money when you open the doors, right?
Let's talk about working capital real quick. So let's just assume that you've got $7,000 in hard costs every month. Mm-hmm. And we're just throwing that number out between rent and utilities and just other things that, you know, you've got to pay your taxes still. You know, you've got some payroll for maybe some people that, you know, maybe you have a receptionist or, you know, whatever it might be. You've got $7,000 of hard costs a month. When you say working capital, you're saying you've got to have some cash on hand because it's very unlikely you're going to start month one and make $8,000. Exactly. You know, right? I mean, this is just a reality of, you know, yes, if everything works perfectly, you know, and from day one, everybody's, you know, appointment book is full and so on and so forth. But the reality is, what if they're not?
Yeah. And I've seen salon owners, I've been fortunate not to be in this bad of a situation. I've definitely, you know, one of my salons, I don't think it even hit break even till almost being open for 2 years, which means I lost money every month for 2 years on that salon. Then I got to break even. Then you hope to get profitability so you can start to make up the losses of those first 2 years.
How were you able to make it? How were you able to make it if you lost $3,000 one month, $2,000 next month? I only lost $500 this month. How were you able to make it?
So, you know, a lot of it was just cash reserves. And, you know, I had other businesses that I could take distributions from to help, and then I'd contribute them to the new business, right? So it's kind of like, that was one of my later salons, and it was also the fact that I knew going in I had a leadership team to help me, but I could give the new salon less energy than like when you're starting your first salon, right? And so as a result, I knew I needed to have like enough cash flow that like when I open that, there's going to be the opportunity to like cover those losses. And luckily we were in that position, but it was calculated. But like I said, I know some salon owners are losing $10,000 to $15,000 every single month until they
did they make it?
They went bankrupt. No, you know, they bankrupted them financially. And, you know, they'd taken money they were hoping to save for retirement to open the salon. And it's devastating to see that happen to people. So that's when we seem like Debbie Downer, to your point, this is just more a cautionary tale of just knowing what it takes so you don't put yourself in a situation to put you back several years, you know?
Okay. Before we tell people whether or not to do it or when to do it, let's talk more about if you're going to do it, some of the things you need to think about. We talked about some of them. Let's talk about more. Like, let's say, okay, you've got capital, you've got a team, you've started, but what about culture and leadership? What does it take? What's the difference between, and this isn't a judgment on them, but there's a difference. What is the difference between, I just graduated from school and I'm going to go, I found the right place I wanted to work. We've talked about that in other episodes. You know, I worked there part-time through school. And so I have a relationship and now I'm going to actually go work there. I'm out of school. I'm going to go work there. What is the difference between that reality? I'm making money in the field. And then the reality of, okay, I'm going to go build a team, right? What is it going to take to go find a team of people to come actually create a studio, create a team?
So I think number one, it takes experience, which I'm not trying to tell everybody how they have to do things, but I think it's a huge mistake when people want to come out of school and open a salon right away without getting more experience first. Because number one, I think as a salon owner, if you're also in the industry as a stylist or a cosmetologist, you need to be able to kind of be a standard bearer for that salon as far as quality of work, quality of customer service, et cetera, and the culture, to your point of like, what's the salon going to be like? But I think experience, number one. And number two is you've got to, and this is, you know, I'll openly admit, this isn't how I started my salon. Some of it was by default, meaning I got people that fit the culture I was looking for. But later, really understand what your core values are for your business. And I know those are like buzzwords in the business world, but there's a lot of truth to what are your true core values? Not aspirational, like, oh, we want to be the best salon. It's like, no, who are you really? Like, what's the feeling people get when they walk in your salon? That's the true culture, right? And that culture, I feel like that feeling, the vibe people get in your salon is from the actual shared values of the team in that salon. And if you can nail those down and then hire based on those core values, it's like you're going to be light years ahead.
Yeah, Nathan, I'll say this, having worked a lot of different places and been around obviously a lot of different businesses. And when I go to a business, I look through the filter in the eyes of a business owner of maybe an interesting story. One of my favorite places to eat is Arby's, which apparently is currently like a joke right now. Like people will call and say like, what do you want at Arby's? And it's a joke, like nobody's at Arby's. But that's one of my favorite places to eat. I'm just that boring. Okay.
Hey.
All right.
Get it.
And I met a young lady who works at the Arby's in a neighboring town. And she was like pumped about it. You know, this is a teenager and oh my gosh. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love Arby's. And da-da-da. I go, but our Arby's in my town's not very good. She's like, oh yeah, it's a hot mess. You know, they've lost a district manager and da-da-da-da-da. Meanwhile, her Arby's is like, she's like, we've won best in the state and da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, whoa. I was like, you love your job. Like, but it looks the same from the outside, but you go inside and one is literally a hot mess and the other is doing great.
Yeah.
And that's the people. It's the people. So here's my challenge or my question to you, Nathan. How do you know that about people unless you work with them?
Yeah. I think that's a great question. I think starting out, you know, I'm going to not to use the experience thing again, but you have to experience working with some people and seeing those traits and recognizing them. Hopefully you do that in jobs prior to opening a salon, right? And
start going,
this is the type of person. And then you kind of create your interview process around those traits, you know, and not ask them, hey, do you have this trait? Like a leading question. You've got to ask questions that they can show they demonstrate those types of traits.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about this in another episode, but this is a good example of, tell me a time when you had a difficult client, or give me two or three stories of difficult clients and how you handled it.
Yeah.
And just leave it really wide open like that.
Yeah.
And see what they say. Because if they haven't had difficult clients, because, you know, they don't know how to handle difficult clients yet.
Yeah.
And then
If they or if they handled them really poorly, you don't want that also, right?
Exactly. So, you know, yeah. but those are the sort of leading questions of what are you going to do when, not if, but when that happens. And if they haven't had work experience, like you haven't had work experience, then they may handle them wrong. Right. But I love that idea of open-ended questions. So those are things you need to think about when it comes to our culture. And I think that you do have to say, like, what has your work experience been, or even work with them? How many times, sort of an aside, how many times do people work at a salon together and then they leave together? Does that happen often?
It happens, unfortunately, quite a bit in this industry. And I say unfortunately, I've heard salon owners say, and I even saw an article, I think, one time that said, it's not when you, as a salon owner, it's not when you have a salon walkout, or if you have a salon walkout.
It's when. Yeah.
Meaning, you know, you might have a bunch of, and it's usually one or two disgruntled employees that don't like something, and they get everyone on the bus. The owner is usually not aware of this conversation. Everyone on the bus, but I'm like, okay, this place is horrible. We can do it better. And if someone else wants to open their own salon, they try to take the whole team with them.
Mm.
And so they kind of like, they are starting a salon and they're trying to auto-populate it with the current salon environment to a new salon. But yeah, that happens quite a bit. And, you know, I think that goes back to salon ownership. You've got to understand your role as a leader. And I didn't learn this overnight. It definitely took me years to realize things, what you can and can't talk to some of your staff about. Meaning like, hey, if you have a staff problem, you can't talk with another staff about it. Salon, right? You're the leader now. You need to talk directly to the staff that's the problem. And then the other thing is, you know, because I worked in a salon first and stylists become very kind of buddy-buddy, but they never quite have that same amount of openness to the owner. And, you know, you'll have a stylist leave and the day you find out as the owner that they're leaving, you find out they're leaving, but you find out that everyone else on staff that have known they're going to leave.
Yeah, they've known it for a while.
And you're like, okay.
Yeah, and it's another thing to think about as we talk about, you know, the topic today being, you know, when do you start, you know, are you prepared for that? I mean, all of your plans are, I've got four chairs and they're full, or they're three quarters full, or they're half full. Well, that's even if you only say they only need to be half full, but what happens if they leave?
Yeah.
Right. What happens if one of those chairs leaves? Your other ones have to come up, right?
Yep.
You know?
And that's just it. It goes back to having cash reserves and a contingency plan, because as anybody that's been in business finds out, you know, you can have the best laid plans and it's never going to go like that. You know, I think I've heard the saying, I've heard it in most ways. If you want to, I think it's make God laugh, or if you want to, like, you know, give the universe a chuckle.
Make a plan. Yeah. Let's talk about one other thing before we sort of give folks the definitive when to start your own salon, which is seeking counsel. Let's just say someone is like, no, I'm focused on, I believe I should start my own salon. What are the group of people that they need to talk to before they go do that? If let's just say they have those things, they have capital, they've got some people, they've done some market research. What are the groups of people that you should go get advice from? What are the groups of people that they would want to talk to?
I think the first two are going to be legal counsel and CPA, like accounting counsel. And what I mean by that is you want to make sure you have your entity structured properly for both liability and tax reasons.
Give me an example really quick of how to do that wrong and how to do that right. Not specifically, you're not giving legal advice, but just...
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people go, oh, I'll go into it this. And it's like, no. If you do that, you're wide open to some issues.
Well, an example, we talked about signing a commercial lease, right? And a lot of times, especially as a new business, the landlord's going to make you sign a personal guarantee. So even if you have an LLC or an Inc., corporate.
Really?
That's going to sign, but you're also going to sign a personal guarantee saying, hey, if this business, because this business is brand new, doesn't work, you're still on the hook for the next 10 years worth of rent, right? And that can be a scary prospect. But like, I'll see a lot of people, they won't put those types of legal, you know, they'll just be like, oh, I'm signing as John Doe. I'm doing the lease. But then they, you know, that means all liability is on you. If someone slips and falls in your salon, are you getting sued? Which brings up insurance, right? You got to talk to an insurance agent and a CPA. You want to make sure both the entity you choose from a legal perspective, but also how you're setting up your business is going to be the most tax advantageous. So you get levels of protection that way too. And so you hopefully have a profit, you know, at the end of the month, right?
Yeah. Yeah. What about, is it difficult to get advice? I mean, that's one of the reasons this show exists, but is it difficult to get advice from other salon owners because they're competition?
You know, there probably is from certain salon owners. And I'm not saying that you should prejudge salon owners, but I think if you ask, you may not from your own salon owner get great advice. Yeah. They don't want you to leave. But I think a lot of times you can go to another salon and be like, hey, you know, can I pick your brain? Can I? And when you say pick your brain to another salon owner, they're busy people. Do something for them. We've talked about this in previous episodes. Go offer them something and then see if, you know, they can share some of their experience and the pitfalls or, you know, the things they need to be aware of, the red flags in opening a business. And there are, again, this costs money, but there's several business groups out there that do salon management and ownership coaching. So that's something to think of too.
Yeah. So let's just say you've done those things, you've got your capital, or you're well, let me put it this way. You understand that you need to get capital, or you understand you need to get a loan, you need an investor. You understand that there's a lot of variables. Maybe, you know, you've thought or learned about a lot of them through this episode. When do you think is there an ideal time for someone to actually go open their own salon, or is it just hard no matter what?
Both. It's hard no matter what, right? But there's definitely a better time. You know, when I was ready, I'd probably been ready for a couple of years. Like, I hadn't really talked about it much with my clients because, you know, I had the thought in my head, hey, I want to open a place. I want to do this. But it was to the point I was in enough demand in the salon I was working at. Like, I was the busiest stylist that my clients were asking me, when are you going to open your own place? And
why do you think they asked that?
They knew I was kind of the standard bearer, the flag bearer at that salon. And I know that sounds like I'm patting myself on the back, but, you know, clients, they come in and they recognize what's happening in the salon. And they recognize that I was kind of the guy there. And I'm not saying the others weren't great stylists because there were some great stylists, but I was the most in demand. I've always been disciplined financially. I had cash reserves. I had more than ample cash reserves at that time to do it, you know, because I didn't want to go out and whittle all my savings away and all of a sudden start going in a hole. So
yeah,
I think those are the best times.
Okay. So the best times are when you have credibility with clients and when you have a funding source that doesn't include, you know, your mortgage in your house. But I also know people that have taken a second mortgage out on their house, done a remodel or build out of a business so that they, like, that was their funding source.
Yeah.
And that was a much better funding source than someone else or literally going to ask a bank for money for, you know, a business loan, you know, because there's different percentages attached to different loans. Certainly better than just putting everything on a card, you know. But some people do that. Some people literally will fund their businesses through just credit, and that can get very expensive very fast. So it's going to be hard even if it's the right time, but there is a right time.
Yeah.
I want you to speak, we'll end with this, because clearly as you can to someone who is like, I've got, you know, 6 months left before I graduate and I'm licensed. I really want to open my salon. What would you tell them? Like, okay, the only way you could open your own salon is if you do this, or here's why it's not going to work.
Yeah. The big thing, and, you know, and I talk about this in some of the business classes I do at the school, but you've got to know your numbers. You know, stylists are notorious for not being, and not all of them, but, you know, again, creative-minded people are not always like the numbers people that want a spreadsheet, right? They want to create. But you have to know your numbers. You have to know, if you're going to open the salon, how are you going to pay these bills? What's your break-even point on a service? You know, like, not only your break-even point, obviously you got to have profit on it to make this business really work. So you have to understand your numbers. And I'd say getting a little bit of that financial literacy and really knowing it and knowing what it's going to take. Because then you can at least execute every day in the salon on, like, hey, here's what I have to do today to make it work. And, you know, if you get behind on Monday, Tuesday's the number went up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And if by Friday, and, you know, so say you open 6 days, if by Friday you've or Thursday you've already crushed the whole week's goals, it doesn't mean you take Friday and Saturday off. You're just ahead, you know. But it definitely takes the pressure off Friday and Saturday, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Yeah. It does. Well, Nathan, as always, thanks for your wisdom and insight. And if you are listening or watching and you're interested in what school you should attend and understanding what questions you need to ask, what are the criteria for making a good decision on what school you're going to attend, I want to point you to a free resource that we've created for you that you can get in the show notes wherever you're watching or listening to this. And if you have questions about any admissions questions, then you can contact Nathan's team at his schools and they can answer any question you might have. Nathan, as always, thanks for your time and your wisdom. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it as well, Andy.